For me, I always say to myself, stay unboxed. I don't want to be put into boxes that other people make for me. It's about being my true self and staying true to who I am.
Happy Sunday, and I hope all of you are well. In today's episode, I am taking you to Ireland, the US, the Netherlands, and into someone's story who is a true superwoman. She probably had the roughest start in life, and yet turned all those adversities into something beautiful, powerful, and inspiring. We're diving today into self-esteem and confidence. By the way, did you know that Irish girls have the lowest self-esteem in the world, according to a study? She also shares her experiences with therapy. Her extra topic is really special. We're talking about foster care here, her own podcast, which is called Unboxed, and so much more. So have a great day, everyone. I appreciate you're here. Check out our other international guests. Like, share, and subscribe to the show. And now get ready for team member number 98, Aisha McFerrin. That's such a strong one, Aisha. Maybe you can share a little bit about, you know, how this whole theme came up, because obviously I can imagine that people have tried to put you in boxes, and that's something that you've, you know, established throughout your life.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it comes from like trauma just from my childhood, things like that. I went through different scenarios. I'm playing hockey. Last year, I tore my knee, so I tore my MCL, and everyone was just like, oh, well, yeah, you play hockey, like, what are you going to do with yourself? Like, you can't do anything else, sort of thing. And I was just like, well, I would like to hope of a few more things in my life going on than just playing hockey. So a lot of it is kind of stem from working on myself, and trying to just, yeah, be honest with myself and who I am, what I want, and not trying to mask and blend in for what other people want for me.
And that can still be such a hard thing, right? It sounds so easy, like just be true to yourself and just be who you really are. And, you know, just looking at my job, at what I do, at the things that I'm confronted with on a daily basis, that's really hard. And you sometimes, like if we're really being honest with ourselves, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you're like, oh, maybe I should do this because that's the right thing to do. Or, you know, I'm in a situation where people should act like X, Y, and you do adapt. So what do you do to stay like true to yourself, to be 100% yourself?
Yeah, like it's so difficult. You have so many pressures around you where, yeah, like societal pressures, you're online, like your friends, everything. You're always trying to, as humans, we just want to be liked. We just want to fit into groups. So it is difficult. Like it's so much easier said than done. But what I try and do is, especially at the end of each day, I'll kind of try and reflect and just look back as like, okay, did I feel comfortable in my choices that I made today? If not, then you kind of learn. Yeah, I work my way through it. It's a lot of work I've done with my therapist in that sense where it's like, okay, were these choices that I would have made? Would I do something different? If yes, then how would I have decided about that? Gone a different route, spoke differently, reacted differently, things like that. It is hard because it's quite, yeah, confronting. You really have to look at yourself in the mirror. But it's
definitely easier not to do it too.
Oh yeah, like it's so much easier just to crawl into bed and just go, right, I'll deal with that in the morning. But yeah, it is tough. And I think I've been fortunate that I've had really good support around me to encourage me to do that, and people that have give me space to kind of work through it. But yeah, it's challenging. It really is. But
it really is. I feel like if you do that kind of work, though, like on the other side of this work, of these questions, that's where the growth really lies. So I can only encourage everyone who's listening to do the same, because that's where the magic happens, really. And I'm hoping for more magic to happen in the next, whatever, 40, 50 minutes. And this was a really rich way to start, and really real way to start the episode too. And I'm really excited for you to be our today's team member. Welcome, first of all. Really lovely to have you, Aisha. And, you know, these episodes are a little bit different because my team members, how I call my guests, always get the chance to introduce themselves, kind of like you would maybe on a FIFA card. Like, what are the most important things? You don't have to go like down all the way into pace and shot and whatever skill and rate yourself in numbers, but maybe you could just give us a couple of facts that we really need to know on who's Aisha McFerrin.
Well, I would always joke with my team that I actually am really fast, so I'll keep the pace up there.
All right, we can, of course. 99.
Oh, I was going to go 100.
Oh, sorry. I don't even know if you can go 100. Sorry.
Okay, We'll take the 99.
No, it's fine. I'm not holding back anyone. You got 100 on pace. Boom. Great start.
Who am I? It's always, I think whenever you're learning and more about yourself, it's always a difficult one to ask or to answer. I would say I'm naturally a caring person. I play sports at a high level, so very competitive. Like, if I have to tie my shoelaces fast, it's a competition.
Important also. Yes.
Oh, very important, you know. I would say I'm quite creative as well. I like art, I like music, I like reading, baking, cooking. Yeah, different styles of creativeness that is very different than just, someone that plays hockey or field hockey, for those that might hear it different. So, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of go with a whim and just like to have a bit of crack.
That's nice. I didn't know cooking, baking, what else did you say? Reading. Those are nice too. What do you like to read?
Oh, if I get hooked in a book, like I'm like quite twisty murder mystery sort of books.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm reading one at the minute called The Cleaner. It sounds a bit vanilla, but it's twisty. Like, this lady goes into people's houses and kills and tries to hunt stuff, but, you know. But I love, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. It's very good.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I've read that, of course.
Very
really
good.
Really nice. Cool. All right, then. And obviously, which was on your FIFA card besides the 100 pace, was, you know, field hockey, which obviously I am really interested in as a former field hockey player myself. Tell us about how you started this whole journey, because actually we're catching you right now in Chile, which is crazy. Thank you for making the time. It's 8 a.m. or 8:30, 8:45 now. 12:45 over here, so you actually got up early for us to make this happen. What does field hockey mean to you? Why are you putting all your effort into it? And how did it start?
For me, it started when I was a kid. I was one of those kids that did everything. I was bouncing off the walls and my mom just kind of shipped me out and was like, go burn off some energy, please come back. Come back when you're tired. So it started, whenever I was younger, just in schools, playing all the time. Didn't take it as serious. And then as I got older, progressed through the age groups with the Irish setup. Really enjoyed it. Loved how it's a team environment. And so I'm a goalkeeper, but so I also like that kind of independentness of like being in the goal. You have a lot of, kind of weight on your shoulders. It's sometimes it's tough because you want to like micromanage everyone, but you can't, you're in a team sport. But I love it. Like, hockey is my life. I actually had this conversation the other day with my coaches about why I liked it so much. And I like the intricacies of what the sport can bring and how people can be individual within it. So, like, a lot of people have their flares. A lot of people have their own strengths that they can bring to the game. But you work as a team to get where you want to go. So I really like that element of it. A lot of maybe team sports might not have that. And hockey, it's a bit crazy.
Definitely. And you just mentioned you're a goalkeeper, and I had this talk the other day with someone on the German side. You actually have to be a little bit crazy to be like to choose free willingly to be a field hockey goalie, because I know, we both know that field hockey unfortunately is not very popular anywhere, maybe besides, I don't know, Argentina and the Netherlands, where you live, by the way. But you know, the ball is really fucking hard. Great players on the fields really know how to hit that ball and really know how to make a good shot on the goal. So tell us, why did you decide to, you know, have people shoot this really hard ball at you at a crazy pace? Why are you enjoying it?
I think your first line is that we're crazy. Simple as that. But yeah, actually, whenever you think about it, we're probably the smartest in that we're the most protected. That's what I keep telling myself to kind of justify the choice. I didn't like running as much, so that's kind of why I stayed in goal.
You're lazy. Basically, you're lazy, girl.
Yeah, I'm a lazy athlete. Yeah, it is true. I know it. Like, I'll do what I need for the sport. But then outside that, I'm just like, why?
Yeah, I get it. No, it's fine. And obviously, it's a joke. You're not. Being a national player even requires so much work.
Yeah, I should confirm that. But I know I am quite, like, I'd be lying on my sofa, like, after training for 4 hours, but not having to do anything, so.
Yeah. All right, man. But there was a little, let's say, bump in the career, right? You dropped out of field hockey at some point. What happened?
It's a slight bump, we'll go with it. But, yeah, so I chose to take a step away from, yeah, just my national team from, when was that? Maybe 2 years ago now? I'm terrible with dates. But anyway, so yeah, I chose to take some time away. I was really struggling mentally with a lot of, yeah, things that were going on in my life in that moment, but also from my childhood. I had quite, yeah, a turbulent growing up, to say, where I lost my mom at a young age. I ended up in foster care. I had, like, family problems with my dad, didn't get along well, separated from my siblings. So whenever you're younger, you think you're indestructible. You're just like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like, it is what it is. I would always say it's my normal. Everyone has their own normal in how they experience life. And so for me, it was, yeah, it just kind of all came to a head in a way where it was like my hockey, I wasn't enjoying it. There was a lot of things going on with my club in Holland. And just, I was really struggling. And it took a lot for me to kind of, yeah, explode in a way. All the pressure cookers kind of went off at the same time. So I chose to step back from the sport to, yeah, just try and help myself. I wasn't helping myself. I wasn't helping anyone around me. I was probably miserable to be around. But yeah, it was a really tough time. So I knew, yeah, then the right thing to do was actually just to step away and try and figure myself out.
And, you know, as we basically started this episode off, we said that figuring yourself out is probably the biggest and hardest task a person, a human being can, you know, conquer or try to accomplish. And I wouldn't ask this so openly if you wouldn't have said it earlier, but you're working with a therapist too, right?
Yeah.
What do you guys do together? Was this like a important person for you during this time as well?
Yeah, so that's kind of how it started. I have a very close relationship with our team psychologist. She is brilliant. Like, she's played sport at a high level, so she understands the demands of it, but she's just a brilliant woman. So I have a very close relationship with her, and she's seen stuff like I wasn't right, and she kind of supported me even the whole way through before taking my break. And she put me in contact with a clinical psychologist. So I would chat to him weekly. And it's funny, like, the first 6 months, I'd be like, oh, I'm in therapy, but I talk about football, or I talk about my hobbies, or I talk about whatever. It's that, like, he really spent the time just getting to know me and trying to understand who I was as a person. Didn't force me into, to talk or do anything that I wasn't ready to do. And so a lot of it is just, I say we chat shies. Like, it's me. But a lot of it comes, like, just how am I experiencing things? Was there stuff that happened? Or is there even anything I want to mention, whether it's, like, could come from a dream, come from a trauma maybe I experience that happens, or just, yeah, we talk about the football at the weekend. Like, so it's quite, I think for me, it's just knowing that I have someone there that I can trust and just talk to, who is like, essentially, he says he's like my number one fan. And like,
oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I know. He's so nice in that. Like, part of me, I'm just like, stop that. You're so positive. But it's just, I've never had anyone like that before. So it's uncomfortable, but it feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's an experience.
It's so interesting the way you're describing how you guys started out. And I think that's actually so important, because a lot of people may be thinking about it or considering, but feeling insecure, or, you know, thinking that you have to be a crazy person to be in therapy. No, you're actually talking to, hopefully, I mean, to this person who is a safe person, a safe space, the way you would speak to your very best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You would say everything. You just get a different kind of feedback, and you kind of get, I don't know, you get jobs back, or like homework back that you have to do now, right?
Yeah, the homework is actually a good way to put it.
Right?
Yeah. And
it's
then
like,
well,
think
it
about this differently. What about if you approach the next challenge in a different way? That's yeah, basically it.
Yeah, they're almost like a soundboard where it's like, okay, you can throw any idea at them.
Yeah.
And because because they're there for you, I don't know, it depends the type of therapist and if you're comfortable with that. They might tell you it's a bit shite. Mine does, because I've told them I like the Brit honesty, like I like that directness that the Dutch
mm-hmm.
have.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just a soundboard for life decisions, whatever you want to talk about, which a lot of us maybe feel that we don't have. Yeah, it's nice, but it's confronting for sure.
Yeah, it's confronting too. And I know you've spoken about this publicly and you mentioned it a little bit as well. I'm not trying to be insensitive. You can guide us here and say, like, tell us what you want to talk about and what you don't. You mentioned your mother passed away. You were in foster care at, I think, age 15.
Yeah.
So very young as well. And I mean, growing up with, I'll say, a certain type of instability now, not being really anywhere, but moving on, having to adjust all the time, that really does something to a young person. And at age 15, you're a teenager, so much stuff is happening on other levels as well. Yeah, how would you say has your upbringing really shaped you, looking into the presents now, looking into or at the athlete that you are, the work that you've done?
I think I always look at it, there's kind of two ways I've taken a lot of it. So on, say, a positive side, it's taught me to be really resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in life has experienced some setback. And I think because I can kind of compare it to, for me, the worst of the worst, ultimately it doesn't seem like a big, downfall is the wrong word, but it doesn't seem like a big thing. And so I'm able to work mm-hmm. through things that way. It's like, okay, well, at least I'm still here. My dark, twisty humor will come through in that way. But on the flip side, it's, you have a lot of insecurities in that, okay, you're always going to feel like you're going to be left, or that it's time to move on from somewhere, or you can't trust those around you because you don't know if they're going to stay, if that's going to change. So there's so many different elements to it. And it is difficult because when you're 15, as you say, you want to live that normal life. You see your friends like doing all this like normal teenager stuff, and you're just like, yeah, no, I can't. I have to go home and like help take care of my siblings, or like clean the house, or like things like this. So there was always that want for like a normal, just like a normal childhood. But I'm mm-hmm. also now like, okay, well, what is normal? So that's where it's like,
yeah,
now I'm able to reflect back on it and see. But yeah, it was definitely turbulent, and it was definitely, yeah, it was something where now I look back at it and be like, okay, that wasn't normal. But in the mm-hmm. moment, you're just like, okay, well, this is my normal. I have to get on with it. Like, you can either choose to, yeah, sit and do nothing and kind of wallow in what you have. Or for me, I know my mom wouldn't have wanted that. She was quite a positive outlook in life. So then mm-hmm. it's always trying to go and achieve the next thing. And that was, my hockey really took off then. So I was just like, right, let's go get into it and see how it goes.
It really took off then, would you say, because of, you know, you being able to deal with adversity, with being maybe stronger mentally in tough situations on the field too?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely have found that a lot of it transfers across, where, say, like in life, you're going to have moments where things get crazy and it's like, can you stay calm? In hockey, that happens 97% of the game, especially as a goalkeeper. So you're just trying to stay calm and,
well said.
And like encourage your way, or encourage people to get through it essentially, and find, we always talk about managing the purple patch. So it's just, yeah, a lot of it is just trying to manage that and see how that goes. So yeah, there's definitely moments like that where it can come across. But like, I remember whenever I was younger, I would have to, we would be training in Dublin, which is like 3 hours away from my my home. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to get a train at like 5 a.m. up to Belfast, wait on a girl to come and pick me up to then go to Dublin. To that, it was just, there's so many things like that where you just have to be, yeah, you're so independent from such a young age that now I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. But it's helped me in the long run, so I'll take it.
Yeah, if you can see it like that, it's, yeah, it's nice. Yeah, sometimes I feel like I would just wish upon everyone to reach a certain level of, you know, independence and resilience and whatever, just without all the pain. Yeah. But I guess that's actually the price for resilience, going through tough shit. Yeah, growing up early, I guess, as well. And I feel you really took it all in, because you made the decision to play college field hockey as well. So basically as far away as possible from everything, doing that by yourself. What about your Louisville episode?
Yeah, well, some would say I was running away from trouble at home. Others would say I was going to get an education. So, you know.
What do you say? Running or education? I know you're not the biggest fan of learning and studying.
Here, it got me a piece of paper in the end, so you know. Yeah. But I would say it was definitely a combination of both, and that kind of like, okay, everyone, you're always told, especially as you're growing up, maybe not so much now, but younger times, you were told that America's like amazing, this place to go, place to be, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And I seen it as a free education. I seen it as a chance to explore America. I seen it as an opportunity to live there for 4 years, meet people from all over the world. I knew maybe the hockey wasn't going to be as good as in Europe, but the life, like the life choices outweighed that for me. The free education was huge, because I came from a single parent household where, yeah, we had no money. Like, we were dirt poor. And I remember then it was like, okay, if I could get free education or go into like 50, 60, 70,000 pounds worth of debt if I stayed at home, I'm like, that's an easy one for me, knowing that the background I came from. But yeah, Louisville was interesting. I left full American. Like, oh no.
What does that mean?
Oh gosh, right. So do you know those people that go over there and they pick up the accent, they pick up the mannerisms, everything? Yeah, that was me. Uh-huh. That was me.
But your accent is not American now.
No, I had to change that. Thank gosh. Yeah, no, there's some words that I say. So even since moving to the Netherlands, like my home accent is so thick and so fast, no one could understand me. Uh-huh. So when I went to America, I had to switch, because like, even like, this is really silly. My phone number, for example, it had like the number 8, but I say, but I would be like, it was like 4781. And people are like, yes, what are you saying? I was like, eat it. And they're like, no, I was like, the number. Yeah, exactly. So that in itself is a prime reason why I like ended up switching. Well, I didn't choose to switch. Apparently, if you're musically talented, you just switch, you know. I'm taking that one.
Of course.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, Louisville, yeah, it was just, but because of the nature of it, you just pick up everything around you. You're in this bubble and living this college life.
You are in a bubble, 100%.
Oh, gosh, yeah. But, like, there was definitely a few toxic things going on over there. Like, I was there where there was a lot of scandals just with our school, a few FBI scandals and things like that. Yeah.
Wait, Was that the sponsorship? And did I think, oh, that was Limo.
Yeah.
I watched the documentary. Was it Netflix? I don't know, but okay. Well, yeah. I wasn't aware.
No, so there's like, there was like 20 schools which were like all investigated and all kind of charged. And Louisville was like the big, we were the example. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting.
And that all happened when I was there. So, you know, every program got hammers
more
because
excitement.
Of, yeah. Mm, got, well, sure, there was a few more cops going about campus. A lot of the parties were cancelled.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
It's okay. There was so many houses that we went to, so it was okay. But yeah.
Interesting.
That's Louisville.
That's Louisville. And what would you say, how did the American experience shape you as an athlete, except for the accent that you changed back? What did you take over when going? Well, I was going to say when going to the Netherlands, you didn't go mm-mm. Dutch right away.
No, I pretty much did. I was like graduated 2019 June, and then September Netherlands.
Mm, okay.
So it was like a quick pit stop at home via Europeans and Belgium, and then off to the Netherlands. But I think America, it teaches a lot of more resilient stuff because the college athlete lifestyle, again, is crazy. I remember times where our coach would just lose the plot and just try and make an example, but she wanted to see how we would react as people. At the time, I was like, oh my gosh, our coach is batshit crazy. But now I look back and reflect. So there's definitely a lot of resilience. The athlete side of me, benefited from the American, like, go hard, run fast, get strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that, though.
I did.
Go hard, run fast, get strong.
Yeah. That's full American for you. Run fast, go hard, keep going.
Go hard. We're in Louisville. Get stronger. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. So there's a lot of that. And just, again, more independence. And learn, yeah, you learn a lot about yourself, especially when you're working with a lot of different cultures. So on my team, we were quite an international team. So yes, of course, a lot of Americans there. The head coach was from Australia. There was girls from England, from Germany, New Zealand, Chile, like all over. So you're managing that group dynamics at an older age. But actually especially as you get older and you're a senior, you're kind of not in charge of it, but like, you can really help shape a group. And so that was mm-hmm. a big one that I learned for me. I think because I am quite independent, I end up trying to take control of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn fairly quickly that that's not possible. And everyone reacts differently in different situations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, being able to transfer that. But yeah, even now still, it's, a lot of that would have come back with me, especially going then to the Dutch, who are a bit more direct, a little bit more, just a small bit, not too much, just a small bit, you know?
Just a small bit, but you know what, the Dutch, especially in field hockey, for people listening and not knowing what the Dutch field hockey is, it's basically top-notch, especially in the women's field. The Dutch national team is, and I think this is across competitions, across male or female teams, they're the most successful team in the history of sports. They've won, I don't know, the Olympics and the World and European Championships, you know, on streaks. It's insane. And field hockey, especially the female side as well, is really popular in the Netherlands. So it's still go hard, run fast, get strong. Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's still that. But, you know, first of all, how did you decide or why did you decide to go Dutch? I'll keep that one up. And what was the experience like over there?
So for me, yeah, as you said, I always knew the Dutch league was the best. I've always said if I have an opportunity to play abroad, I have to do it. Like, I can go home anytime if I don't like it or if I want, whenever I retire. So I thought, yeah, let's go. Let's try and get somewhere. So I was between Germany and the Netherlands. So I was talking to a few clubs in both. last minute, then a club in Holland got in contact. There was a few switcheroos, and then I ended up going to a club called Kampong. So it's based in Utrecht. I was there for 4 years.
Oh my God, you have a Dutch dialect speaking Dutch too. That's crazy.
Yeah, I can talk. I can also talk quite a bit of Dutch as well. Mm-hmm. I don't tell the Dutch people this, but like I can understand a lot more than what I let on. So then it's like whenever I come into a room, I'm like, interesting. I know what's going on here. But yeah, so lived in Utrecht, still live in Utrecht. I love it there. It's quite central, it's like big city, small town vibes, which is really nice. Like it reminds me of home in that sense. But the club was interesting. So I had like 6 head coaches in 4 years. Quite a turbulent time. Obviously, COVID was in around all that. And then we just, as a club, we were struggling. Like, for me, I always said it starts with the higher-ups in the club. You can't go through 6 head coaches in 4 years and think it's something that the players are doing. So, yeah, the directness of some of the Dutch players came across, and coaches were in, coaches were out, and yeah, in the end, I just find it quite toxic. A lot of the girls and even some of the coaches would publicly shame me that it was my fault as the goalkeeper. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was just like, well, I'm done. Like, I'm out. And this is also kind of whenever I was choosing to step back from the national team.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's the direct Dutch for you. But it's okay. I can laugh about it now. I've kind of moved past it. But yeah, so I moved to a new club called Tilburg. This is my second season with them and love it. The girls, the club, it's so welcoming. It's more that like family vibe, that like kind of, it's like still one of the biggest clubs in the Netherlands, but it's warmer. It feels warmer. There's no big names on the team. Everyone just wants to play, enjoy, have fun and do well. And I like that.
Girl, how did you move past the public, I'll say shaming, because it really is. And, you know, I just know how my friends are. I know how I am. If someone would say stuff like that about me, I would have to work on that a lot, because I know that I always try to see if it's actually true or not. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, opening up to the possibility of it being true requires a lot of work to not crumble.
Yeah, it was like I was ready to quit the sport. I remember sitting in the team manager's house, and she is a brilliant woman again. I've been so fortunate that I've had a lot of really strong women around me. And again, I was sitting in her house because the interview came out that morning from my head coach at the time, and was like, yeah, pretty much just, it's my fault. I'm not playing well. I'm creating all this. Which I'm like, fine, okay, you're entitled to your opinion, but we always spoke as a team, you keep it in-house. As I was sitting in the manager's house, I was talking through her. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. I want to quit. Then the head coach tries to call me to apologize. And I'm like, no, you're not getting away trying to do this over the phone and do it cheaply. Like, I'm not having that. If you want to apologize to me, you can do it to my face. I'm quite stubborn with things.
You said that to head coach on the phone?
No, I couldn't answer. I was talking to the manager, because I was like, like, if I answer, I will say something I regret. So I just ignored her. We had training the next day, so I thought then, okay, you can speak to me at training. And then she was there early, didn't say anything before the team or during the team meeting. She's like, yeah, I tried to call you, but you ignored me. I was like, yeah, I'm done with this. Yeah, so it was tough. It was really tough, because I was like, okay, is this actually behaviors that I'm doing? Is it something that I have done that I'm not willing to accept? And I spoke to, again, like, thank gosh I had my therapist at the time. Otherwise,
so
that...
So important.
Oh,
yeah.
And even the manager, she was like, no, like, it's not, these behaviours aren't something that you're showcasing. And a lot of people had struggles with the head coach at the time. So, yeah, it was tough. But I knew ultimately I was able to offset it and be like, look, this isn't on me. I haven't done anything that I would change or would question. Okay, maybe... Yeah, no, not even. So I remember at the time thinking that is like, okay, would I have changed something I would have done? What I said, reactions, etc. If I can say no to that, then yeah, for me, I was able to then, I find that easier to move on than constantly questioning and being like, what if I did this? Yeah. What if I did this? Yeah.
It takes a lot though. And you know, I was wondering what you think about the whole concept of confidence in general. And I would love for you to share with us maybe tips and tricks or, you know, bits and pieces of your experience on how you establish your confidence, what it means to you, where you're taking it from. Because it's still, especially for girls, one of the biggest struggles in life, professionally, personally, everything.
Yeah, you're always taught as a woman to, and a girl, just to put yourself down. You're not good enough. Like, how can you ever
apologize?
Like, how can you ever achieve confidence if you're just constantly thinking in that way? So I think there's a few things that I do. So I spoke to our team psych a lot about confidence comes from, I'm doing her justice here, am I? Confidence comes, it comes from like previous things you've done well. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. if you can look back and say, whether it's any situation in life, whether it's you felt good about an outfit, where you felt good about a conversation or how you felt one day, that's something that, you know, you've done it before. You can do it again. It doesn't just disappear. You don't just change overnight with that. And so that's where I would actually write down, or like even video for hockey, a lot of things where it's like, okay, I felt good in this. I felt really confident with this. I felt my outfit that day was really, really cool.
Like, you're reminding yourself of that moment, how you felt, what you did, what the situation was. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because like a lot of times I actually don't go back and read it. I really struggle to read things back.
But it's, me too.
Yeah. I just kind of like write it and then like put it in a drawer. It's like, okay, thanks. But
same,
it's
yeah.
even the practice of writing things down, you get more of like a memory of it. And you're able then to keep it more, visceral in that sense. So I would do a lot of things like that that's really kind of helped me. And even if it's like, I know we always talk about like people with phones in their hands all the time, but like just even having like photos and videos of like, and looking back on those and seeing something that you actually really liked and really enjoyed and made you feel good. Yeah, that is something that's so tangible and so easy that, it will help. Yeah, for me, I find it helps me a lot.
I love it. It's like the video analysis you do with your team, but for yourself and for life. It's really nice. It's good. I'll remember that. And I hope everyone listens to this and does that for themselves. Girl, because, you know, I was thinking of the whole self-esteem and confidence thing. And I was like, wait, Aisha is Irish, so I have to bring this up. Because I read this on Instagram first and then Googled it. And it's true. There was a study they did and they found that Irish girls have the lowest self-esteem in the world.
Hmm.
That's insane. Yeah. And I was like, wait, you know, there have to be reasons why, of all places, it's Ireland, where the self-esteem is so low. But that's wild. I was like, I need to bring this up.
Yeah.
You're Irish. You still have friends and family back home. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's crazy. But I remember seeing it also on Instagram, you know, like 97% of where we get our information. But
but, you know, I double checked. Yeah. It was not just whatever shitty information. It was actually real.
Yeah, but a lot of the times, and I would do it still quite a lot, where we would just say you brush it under the rug. Or like, so if someone, say, tried to give you a compliment and was like, oh, your hair looks good today, you'd be like, oh, it's grand. Like, I just shoved it up. Or if your outfit looked cool, or if you said something that's really cool, and it's like, oh no, like you just brush it away. Like, you just be like, oh no, it's, yeah, we really struggle to take on, confident, or like things are said well to us, but then it also doesn't help on the other hand that I think a lot of our culture and beliefs, and even how the country is run, it's very backwards. Like, so backwards.
How so?
Well, like, for example, there was the government held a, like, they were supposed to have a meeting the other day to discuss gender violence. And it was one of the poorest, like, no one went. I think there was about 10 people that went out of the whole government.
Nobody cares.
No. So it's even an example like that, where it's literally within the past week, shows how little is thought about women, how little they're valued. So if that's at the highest level, it's going to transcend down through society. So if things don't change up, like at the top, you can have people being nicer to your friends and trying to support each other and whatever, but it can only go so far if a society and culture isn't willing to kind of be open and accept it, that women, girls are valued and bring so much to society and to what a place can offer.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I hope there are some Irish girlies listening and feeling inspired by what you do and how you have overcome everything and, you know, developed into this great athlete everyone should look up to. So we're trying to do our parts.
One step at a time.
One step at a time. You know, you've made a lot of steps already, Aisha. Mm. So don't be too humble. Don't brush it under the rug.
Yeah.
Not here, not today. No, girl. Hell no.
Damn, I got caught on my own stories.
That was crazy. All right, let us move on to our next part of the conversation. We have three little categories here, and you can pick them and decide what we're going to talk about next.
We'll go one in your left hand. Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, that is the shootout. I have prepared a couple rapid-fire questions.
Okay, go on.
You can take your time answering or answer really fast. Waffle away. You taught me this before
yes!
we started recording. I'm half Irish at this point.
No, literally, like you fit in anywhere.
All righty. Ireland or the Netherlands?
Ireland.
Yeah, still home.
Still.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
What's your favorite workout?
Like kind of like a CrossFit style-esque. Kind of got a bit of everything.
With less running.
Yes.
Oh, less like, running, more lifting.
Put me on like the bike. Fine.
Yeah. Hate the bike. Okay.
Yeah.
Like the, what's it called?
The assault bike.
The assault bike. I was like, it has a horrible name. Yeah, the assault bike. It's incredible. I slowed down. Everyone was like, what are you doing? Like, I'm moving though. Oh, it's horrible. But I do get the CrossFit love.
Yeah, it's nice.
Would you rather be the guest on a podcast or do the interview?
Do the interview. I like getting to know people. Yeah, I like understanding where people come from, how they think about things. I find it interesting.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about this and we can take more time even after, but you're doing your own podcast too, which is called Unboxed, the Unboxed podcast, by the way. So it perfectly fits to how we started this interview. Tell us a little bit about it. Season one is already done and in the books, 10 episodes there, and season two is coming really soon, right?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of planning, rebranding, doing a slight rebrand for season two.
Rebrand.
Yeah, I picked pink and I don't know why I picked pink. I'm not a pink person.
Why not, girl? It's great.
Yeah.
Catches the eye.
You know, that is true. But yeah, season two is coming out. I've already got some amazing guests lined up. Super exciting. Again, really inspirational people. They can tie into that idea that we all have a different story. We're not just the label that people or society or our job does. So yeah, super excited for it. I think it's, going to be another fun one. I'm just shocked that it's got this far. But I love doing it. I love chatting to people. As I've said, I could waffle away to anyone. So, you know.
Why are you shocked that it has gotten this far? What do you mean?
So I tend to get really invested in stuff for like 4 to 6 weeks. I have ADHD, which, you know, prime example.
100%, yeah. I wonder if I do too, but I totally, you know, I feel you.
Yeah. And then normally after that, I'm like, well, I'm done, bored, next thing, let's go. But this is something that I'm still like really hooked and gripped on. I think just because everyone has their own story and it's nothing is the same, and it allows a lot of people to be seen and be heard through these conversations.
How did, you know, the idea come about to start your own thing next to playing?
Well, it actually started whenever I tore, well, when I did my knee, because everyone was just like, oh, you can't play. Like, what are you going to say? And I was like, I'm so fed up with people thinking that hockey is all I have. Like,
that I am.
Yeah. It's like,
field hockey, yeah.
Yeah. I'm more than just that. And I think I've spoken to so many athletes who feel the same. And it's not just athletes, it's everyone. So many people are just put into a box that you're just given, where it's like, okay, like it could be like, oh, Lisa, you just do this podcast. It's like, no, like you do a million other things as well. And so it's that idea that we're more than just what people want to see. And shout out Red Bull. They were class and phenomenal. Yes. At helping me set it up and really encouraging me to do it. So I was on a weekend away in Austria. It was lovely. But yeah, just again, waffling to people, chatting away.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had this idea where I wanted to do something at Paris where I would go around and chat to different Red Bull athletes about their experiences, who they are, etc. But then I thought, this might not work out, because obviously they're a bit focused on competing at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I was just there as a diehard hockey fan slash
and I mean that's how we met, right? Because yeah. I was doing the Red Bull podcast back then, and we had our episode in the, oh my god, the Red Bull house in Paris. Was so cool.
Sick.
And I still hope that you know, at least got to connect with some of the athletes, because a lot of them passed through there too.
Yeah, there were some really, really cool athletes, like even Hazal from whenever we did the chat. Like, she is amazing.
She's a parkour runner. She is the sweetest. Yeah, I love her.
Honestly, and she's just so, again, just phenomenal, 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 phenomenal. Like, just brings such good energy, and is just a great person. And just, you can just listen to her talk all day.
Was she on your podcast?
Not yet. She is.
Yeah, I was like, have to, because, you know, just thinking about the unboxing, you guys really had a moment there on stage too, because, you know, you were really unboxing. You were really open and really genuine about your stories, which are, breathtaking, really. And she would be perfect.
Yeah.
You're a really good match.
Yeah, she is, she's agreed. We haven't got a date yet. I would love to record with her in person. So trying to find a window in my very extensive hockey schedule to, you know, take a quick detour over to England.
To Brighton, where she lives.
To see her, but no, she's definitely on it. I've got a few other folk lined up as well. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
So when will season number 2 will be released? Where can we watch? It's a video podcast too, right?
Yeah. So
watch and listen to it?
Watch and listen, available on Spotify. The video is also on Spotify, Apple Music, and also on YouTube. Season 2 will begin 1st of May. So I need to get... I'm obviously away in this tournament now, so get through that. And then, 1st of May, new episode will be dropped. And there might be a spin-off series going at the same time. So,
So a lot happening. What's your release schedule? Which day? Every week? Weekly?
Yeah, every week, every Tuesday. And it'll be up for 8 a.m. like UK time, 9 European time.
All right, then. Can't wait for you to go all out for season 2. We'll support for sure. And let's keep on going with our little rapid fire question. Took a little detour there,
side
but you know.
Track.
We can do whatever we want. And actually, the next question is, because I do see you on your Instagram drinking a lot of coffee or Red Bull? These are the tough ones. Aisha.
Big sponsor morning ritual. Lisa.
I'm sorry. You can say you drink both. You like both.
I do love both. I do love both.
But it has to be the right time of the day, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I would say coffee.
Yeah, that's okay.
Mainly based on like the ritual that comes with that in the morning.
Yeah, got it.
Do you know? That's like okay. It's the sitting
100%.
Time. But like after 10 o'clock, then it's the Red Bulls.
See? Perfect.
Yeah.
It has to be both. Otherwise, the day is not complete. No,
I can't pick. We're going both.
It's a tough one. I wasn't aware that I was...
Yeah, that was harsh.
...putting you on the spot here. what's your favorite sport aside from hockey?
Cycling. Track cycling.
Yeah, like outside track?
No, the like in a velodrome.
Yeah, okay.
Phenomenal. Love watching it. I haven't done it. I would cycle quite a lot, but only on the roads. But I love track cycling. I think it's class. Yeah.
Really tough one too. You really have to, oh my God. It's dangerous too.
Yeah, I've seen really bad injuries come from it.
Huh. All right then.
There must be something drawing me in.
Oh, there, yeah. You travel a lot, so beach or mountains?
Mountains, easy.
Oh, that was a fast one, really.
I'm
what
ginger.
What do mountains do?
I'm ginger and I'm Irish.
So it has to be mountains.
It has to be mountains.
I love that. I'm ginger, so it's mountains.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the last one is, what job do you see yourself doing after finishing, like after playing field hockey, after your career?
That's tough. Because I'm in that space.
And it's a big one, obviously.
I'm in that space at the minute where I've always think I could do everything. So I'm like, I would be a really good dog walker. I would love it. I would have the best kennels. I would be unreal at cutting hair. I want to have my own bakery. I want to be a coach. I want to have my own podcast studios. So any of the above, pretty much.
Yeah. But I mean, you can also do everything. You can, you know, do your podcast stuff in the morning or the evening and bake in between. And
Easy.
Yeah. Oh, so it's going to be a bright and colorful future for sure.
I hope so. We're going to see.
100%. Two more categories to go.
We'll go right hand.
Right hand.
Yeah.
I'm always so confused that my right hand is actually the right hand in the screen as well. I always go, wait, right? Right? No. It's the right way. Yeah. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. Einwurf, that's the next one. That's like, you know, a throw-in. And this is the moment, Aisha, where you bring a topic into the conversation that you feel needs a stage or deserves a stage.
Something I'm actually really passionate about is kids in care. Sorry, it's quite deep, I know.
I love deep. That's why we're doing this.
Based on one, my own experiences, but two, having seen kids in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, and also in the Netherlands, where society thinks that, one, they're the problem, they're the reason that they're maybe in foster care, two, that they can't bring anything, they have nothing to offer society, even though, like in Ireland, for example, I think there's 30,000 kids plus in foster care.
Wow.
Whether that's like short term, long term, like respite care, so say if like a parent is sick or something like that. And so it's something that I'm so passionate about because I'm like, I'm a product of the foster care system. And there's so many kids that, okay, their dream might not be to play international sport. I get that that is also a bit batshit crazy.
But it's not too crazy, actually. It's not. It's fine. It's a good goal.
It's a good crazy. Like,
yeah,
there's a nice balance between it. But I think that for those kids seeing and hearing that a society believes in them to go after their dream, to go and chase something, whether it's to go to university, to go and get a job they want, to go on a trip that they really, really wanted to do, but have never had the support to do it. Yeah, it's something that I always talk about. I think it's so important to kind of keep it on the table whenever talking to people, because a lot of times people just, forget and rush kids off to the side, but they don't realize that this is your future. This is what's going to run the country. This is what's going to run organizations. This is what's going to, keep society alive, and you're just going to brush them away like that. So it is something I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, and I totally understand. What are things that you feel society should do or every single person could do to encourage these kids to, you know, and at the end of the day, we're still talking about or talking again about self-esteem here. The belief that anything is still possible, that, you know, even though other people are putting you in a box, that's not who you are or have to be.
What, from my experience, a lot of it should come back and asking, how can I help? What do you need? Can I help you do anything? Literally a simple line like that, or, oh, that's a great idea. I believe you're going to do great. Go and get that. Something honestly as simple as like words like that, whenever you're talking with someone or even talking about kids or anyone, yeah, with self-esteem issues, that can just encourage them to think for themselves instead of being told, okay, well, you need this, this is what you have to do. Because if you're constantly told that you have to do something or that you need something, you're just going to block it out. You're just going to be like, nah, like, I'm not doing that.
Mm.
So I think that's a big one. Like another simple thing. So everyone has backpacks, like everyone uses some sort of luggage.
And 100%.
So there's a charity I connect with at home called Mad Lug.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is it's honestly like, it's so simple. You're just like, how does this work? They have like backpacks, laptop cases, like suitcases where they would then, they sell them, but whenever they sell them, they give like a bag to a kid in care.
Mm-hmm.
Because so when I moved like into my foster placement, all my stuff was in bin bags.
Shut up.
Yeah. And so like that was nothing on my uncle that I lived with, but they didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. I was just like, oh, shove it in, like off we go. But even as society, that's what we do. Like that's how we treat kids. You just put their stuff in trash and then, okay, like off you go. Good luck. So like even that in itself, like what sort of message are you sending if you're just going to put someone's stuff in a trash bag and then send them on? Do you know what I mean? Like it's, you're just like, it's so simple. But
that's wild.
Yeah, it can make a world of difference.
Hmm. What's the name of the organization again?
Mad Lug.
M-A-D-L-U-G.
M-A-D-L-U-D. L-U-G. Mad mm-hmm. Luggage. Yeah.
That's wild. Do you know if they only operate in Ireland?
No, they ship all over.
Cool.
Yeah.
I will send a backpack.
It's mad because it's like, you're like, oh, this is so simple.
It's so simple. And it gives like dignity.
Literally. Like I've had it and I've seen and I've spoke to the guys that own the organization where it's like kids, like plastic bags are the most weakest thing there is. You blow at it and it'll rip. So it's like, yeah, moving all your stuff, kids, your bag's ripping, like you're moving in somewhere. Yeah, it's sad. Like it is really sad when you think about it.
Yeah, that's cool though. Let's send some backpacks to Mad Lug, everyone. I'll definitely put the link into the show notes and maybe we can help a little. That would be really nice.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
That was a really good throw in. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it really has me thinking too.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. There's so much going on in this world. And Aisha, I really should have pulled this category earlier, I think, because I feel like we kind of touched upon it earlier, but let's do it with a little more space right now. The last category we have left is the head coach. And I always hope that my team members here, my guests, dig a little bit into their pasts, because I truly believe everyone has someone in their life who has or is acting or helping in a way a really good head coach in a team would. Mm. And it can be a person, it can be a group of people, it can be a book or an activity you do. But yeah, we would love to hear who or what has been or is your head coach, your personal, coach in your life?
At the minute, I would say it varies or it changes as you go through different moments in life. But I would say it's definitely my like team psychologist, like the mom, the glue, she's got her own family. She's got like her own 4 kids, but like, we're also her like other 18 kids, even though I'm like almost 30.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, she's just amazing. Like, again, she's just another soundboard for me. She's helped guide me through so many things. She's been there and supported me. She would, yeah, she's just, she gives me the confidence that I need to kind of take on challenges, will help me reflect, will help me see that I've done well, that I've also for myself, I've had growth. I've went through hardships. I've had really good times. I've had success. I've maybe not been great when I thought I was. Yeah, she's kind of that. She holds many different hands and just phenomenal, phenomenal woman.
Is there maybe one thing, like a sentence or a tool or an activity that has really impacted you and stayed with you during the work with her?
We would do a lot of box breathing. So like even as a team, like before we go and play, we would really just to try and calm ourselves. And we would do this thing where she like would talk us through it. And it sounds silly. It's probably going to sound a bit funny, but I love it because I'm quite a visual. I can see things. Sorry, that makes me sound like I'm a
medium. No,
you're fine. I'm a medium. Here comes.
Maybe you are too.
No, but I can imagine things quite clearly. So we always talk about like having the ice in her veins, being calm, being cool, like in the head. Ooh. So it's like your head is like the blue, but then you have that like fire crackling feeling like in your body and how it like kind of mixes here. So it's like you're able to stay calm
like
under pressure.
Neck, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're able to stay calm under pressure, but then you have that like fire within you to go. And I always find it something.
I love that. I've never had that image.
Yeah.
That's perfect. My God.
Yeah. So it's something we would do quite a lot between that and like the box breathing. It just helps calm you, settle you down. Yeah.
Oh my God. The cold head, but the fiery burning body. That's, mm-hmm. I love that. Oh my God. I will never forget this.
You're just going to imagine yourself and then your neck is like purple. It's like a slush puppy mix.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. Oh, that's really cool. I love it. Thank you for sharing. And Aisha, thank you for this full hour at this point of talking to us, of sharing everything, of being really open and real. I love that. And we need more of more realness in this world and more, you know, vulnerable and open and emotional people. Thank you so much. We need more girls with self-esteem too. And you're one of them. And so I would love for you to close our episode now with a little pep talk to all the girls and maybe boys obviously listening who, you know, either need a little push in terms of self-esteem or just to stick to whatever they're trying to achieve.
Ooh, okay. I believe life is always going to give challenges. It's always going to throw something in the way. It's always going to have people who are going to doubt you. But all you have to do is stay in the moment now, take one step at a time, and trust that you're on this path for a reason. You chose to be here, and it's important you do what's right for you.
And I'm crossing all my fingers for you to keep doing just that for yourself. Crossing my fingers for the new season of the Unboxed podcast. I'm going to put it into the show notes as well. All the best for obviously the gangs in Chile right now, and hope to see you soon somewhere in this world, girl.
Yeah, I hope so also. Thanks a million for your time. You're amazing, Lisa.
So are you, love. Thank you.